DiscerningHearts.com presents St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation, according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Father Gallagher is featured on several series on the EWTN television network, including Living the Discerning Life. He's the author of numerous books on the teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola, as well as on the teachings of Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor.
This is another thing we won't explore in detail, but there is an extensive series of letters that Marie wrote to Celine, beginning at this point, but most of them written after Therese's death. And there are 73 of these letters. And if you read through them, it's the best avenue into the growth that takes place in Marie after the death of Therese, because Marie becomes the spiritual guide for Celine. And at first, you see her, she's a little tentative about things, but as the years go by, she becomes increasingly a very sure guide for Celine. Celine is married, she has two daughters, and she undergoes a fair amount of suffering. There are health issues with her children, herself, tensions in the larger family, and she shares all of these with Marie, and Marie responds. And as I've already said, quoting the author of the biography of Marie, as you read these letters, sometimes you'd be hard put to know whether it's Marie or Therese writing, because you watch Marie progressively assimilate the teaching that Therese gave to her. And now Marie, I will see a little more of this yet, who is so scrupulous about receiving communion, she now is helping Celine over her scruples in the same way. And so you see her be maturing and growing spiritually. And if you were to read those letters, they're all posted on the website of the Carmel of Lisieux. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find Celine's letters to Marie. They're not there. Would have been interesting to read those. But you have Marie's letters, and from them, you can see the various things that Celine is going through. But that's just to say, this is another, I'd say, significant thread in the life and spiritual journey and growth of Marie. One thing I will say, if anyone does go and look up those letters, you'll find that the translation is a bit lacking. Evidently, what they did was they ran, and these are hundreds and hundreds of letters, family members to family members, they ran them through a computer program, and this was some years ago, so it wasn't perfect, with the great benefit that we have these letters in English, but you have to be willing to accept a translation that isn't always perfect, but you can read them. All right, here, this is a letter of Marie to Celine Potier, who is already married at this point. And she writes this. So this is during Therese's life. I thank God for permitting me to know this little saint, for here in the community she is loved and appreciated as such. Actually, the ones who knew Therese best were the novices, because of the daily ongoing contact and meetings with her and her talks to them, which were informal but very rich. They were the ones who best appreciated Therese. Not everyone in the community did, but Marie certainly does. She knows Therese well here. And then what follows is for all of us. She's writing to a woman who is not a religious, who is married, who has children, who is living in the secular sphere. Hers is not an extraordinary sanctity. There is no love of extraordinary penances, no, only love for God. And in fact, in Therese, she did perform the various penances which were part of the ascetical life of the monastery. But you don't have her going out into deserts and prolonged fasts and these kinds of things that you can admire but feel that's not something I could ever live myself. People in the world can imitate her sanctity. And that is absolutely true. There is not one of us who cannot do what she did. And that is to fill the, in quotes, small things of every day, which is most of our life, with every bit of love that you can put into them. That's the heart of it. convinced that in doing that, that's all God needs. And there's the elevator. He'll lift that up and make it fruitful and all the rest. People in the world can imitate her sanctity, for she has tried to do everything through love and to accept all little contradictions, all little sacrifices that come at each moment as coming from God's hands. And that's the heart of it. It's little in terms of, let's say, the world's understanding of holding back the angry word that I would have liked to have said and smiling and so forth. But it's heroic in terms of the love. And then look at the astounding fruitfulness of living this way. That's all Therese ever tried to do, was to put all the love that she could into the little things of every day, living with 25 other women, completely unknown by the world. And look at the astounding fruitfulness of this. She saw God in everything, and she carried out all her actions as perfectly as possible. Daily duty came before everything else. As for pleasure, so fun, what about fun things, things you enjoy? As for pleasure, she knew how to sanctify it even while enjoying it, offering it up to God. Now, I'm going to insert into the chronology at this point a part of a text that Marie herself wrote, and she wrote this after Therese's death. And these are her memories of Therese, if you will. Different things that Therese said to her, conversations, teachings of Therese, and they're lovely things. This text is found also on the website of the Carmel of Lisieux, and it's translated, and here it's a good translation in part, in the book Last Conversations, in the section where the author places these writings of Marie, both the letters of which we've quoted a part, and then this section of her remembrances of Therese. So the first of these, Marie entitles Forget Yourself with an exclamation point. We've seen this earlier, but this is its setting here now. And for my self-love, oh, how often she said these words to me. I beg you, be a little less concerned about yourself. Concern yourself with loving the good God and be less centered on yourself. A little later in this text, we'll get a very good insight into these sufferings, these convoluted, tormented almost, and sometimes despairing almost sorts of thoughts about her worthiness or lack of it, and should she receive communion, and will she be saved, and all of this. I do have to say that in this, you see one of the really harmful effects of the lingering Jansenism that was still in the air. Jansenism was passed in the sense that it was condemned by the church, but its lingering effects, the sense of God as a harsh judge, ready to focus on your faults and before whom you didn't know whether you would gain eternal life and so forth, this whole image of God, which Therese is so instrumental in undoing, that's one of the key things. It's a rediscovery of the gospel, as John Paul II said of her. Of God's love. That's where you get in Therese, for example, the offering of herself, not to God's as a victim of to God's justice, as others were doing, but as a victim to God's merciful love. It just turns the whole thing around in Therese. But I think what you get in Marie is you get an offshoot of this kind of practice, the severe presentation of God, which was fear-inspiring. And so you would have very good people with very sensitive hearts, simply desirous of loving the Lord and caught in this kind of fear, in this kind of self-doubt and so on. And Marie really experiences this. And what Therese is saying to her is, oh, just stop worrying about all that. Don't be so concerned with yourself and how you're doing and all this. Concern yourself with loving the good God. Well, all of Therese is right there as well. And be less centered on yourself. All your scruples are a seeking of self. You're just worried about yourself and centered on yourself. Your sorrows, your pains, all that centers on yourself. It always turns on the same pivot. Oh, I beg you, forget yourself. Think about saving souls. She said this to me every time I met her. And again, that's pure Therese. Just don't worry about yourself. Therese will say that she has absolutely no concern about her merits in the face of, as God views her life, all she wants to do is love and spend herself for the saving of other souls. And if you think of it, who could count the number of people who have grown closer to God or returned to God because of Thérèse? And look at the amazing fruitfulness of that effort. So every time Marie comes to Thérèse with her woes and her worries, and Thérèse just keeps repeating the same thing to her, just let all that go. Concern yourself with loving the good God. Think about saving souls.
We'll return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app where you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Essef, Deacon James Keating, Father Donald Haggerty, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more. They're all available on the free Discerning Hearts app. Over 3,000 spiritual formation programs and prayers, all available to you with no hidden fees or subscriptions. Did you also know that you can listen to Discerning Hearts programming wherever you download your favorite podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, even on Audible, as well as numerous other worldwide podcast streaming platforms? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has a YouTube channel? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts Catholic podcasts dedicated to those on the spiritual journey.
Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these podcasts, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
We now return to St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.
Next one is entitled Ask Forgiveness Humbly. Regarding humility, she always said to me, "It's so beautiful when a little novice is humble, who breathes humility in everything, who always humbles herself instead of rebelling, who admits her wrongs, who is humble in her manner and in her tone of voice." And then Marie gives an example. One day, when I had had a little argument with Sister X, so she's not identified, one of the sisters, I had not been wrong at all. She, that is, Thérèse, agreed. But she advised me to apologize nonetheless. All right, yes, you weren't wrong, but go to her anyway and apologize. I rebelled. That's pretty honest, you know. I rebelled and did not want to do it. So she said to me, "To not ask forgiveness except when one has been wrong, there is no merit in that. It is to ask forgiveness when one has not been wrong at all." Pretty demanding and very biblical. Love is patient. Love is kind. It bears all things and so forth. It hopes all things. Thérèse's little way is little, if you will, in the external context. So here's just a small argument between Marie and another sister. Nothing's broken. Everything goes on, but there's been a little argument there. Don't let that go. And find the way to bring love and charity into that and humble yourself in that way. That's pretty demanding. I don't have to think long to think of situations in which I haven't been wrong and I feel that others have misjudged or mistreated me in some way. And to think that I need to take the initiative to go to that person and apologize or whatever. You touch something very heroic, and imagine a family or a relationship or a husband and wife, you know, where each related to the other along these lines. And then this goes on. So this is another time. Another time, again with Sister X, so with the same sister, I was very much wrong. And I said to Thérèse with a somewhat light tone, "Oh, all right, I'll go and ask her forgiveness." And then Thérèse replies, "Oh, yes," she replied. "You'll go ask forgiveness laughing. When we ask forgiveness, we must always do it humbly, in a serious way, and not laughing." That is, really mean it. Don't just do it pro forma or as a gesture, but it really needs to come from your heart. and then a third experience. And with another sister toward whom I had not really done anything wrong, she counseled me to go and humble myself with her and to reply, "You're right," to all the little remonstrances she made me. Again, the same. You see Therese doing, and she did this with all the novices. She's always raising up the level, always inviting them to take the next step. Don't just remain on the human level or where your emotions are in this. Live this out of love. Live this out of the gospel. Live this for Jesus. Now, what comes to my mind as I read this is that passage I've just quoted a little of in 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7. Love is patient and kind. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. Love bears all things, endures all things. And this is a chapter that Therese knows very well, because when she has that discovery of her vocation, I want to be the warrior, the priest, the martyr, I can't, but then Paul in this very chapter says, I will show you a yet more excellent way. And then love is everything. And then you have that heart's cry from Therese in the heart of the church, I will be love. This is what she means. And this is how it's lived in the day to day.
Father Gallagher, I couldn't help but hear in what you were describing, Therese, the counsel that she was giving, just a little bit of some of the instruction that the great spiritual mother of the order, Teresa of Avila, would write in regards to when someone criticizes you. I'm paraphrasing, but essentially take it in, because there's probably a little bit of truth in there somewhere. She is a little bit more earthy and a little bit more blunt. It seems as though Therese is, I don't want to say takes it up a level, but gives it her particular kernel. Are the sisters in her, do you know that she's overseen? Would there be moments where they would read sections of those instructions from Teresa?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because in Therese, you have frequent mention of St. John of the Cross. And there's a point, as she says, when she's 17, 18, when he is her whole spiritual nourishment. And you'll see her quoting him as you go forward. But you don't see the same thing with Teresa of Avila in her. There seems to be less of a presence there. And what she would have read of Teresa of Avila and how well she would have known her is something I really can't answer. What I can say is she doesn't appear as much as St. John of the Cross when you look at those two foundational saints, you know, of the Carmel. Okay, the next one here is entitled, Be Cheerful for Others. And you're going to get the other-centered Therese here. So this is Therese speaking to Marie. Regarding the times of recreation, and we've cited this before, so for an hour twice a day after the main meals, the sisters go to the common room, if the weather is not nice, outside, and they spend an hour together, kind of sitting in a circle. There are photos of them, and they'll be occupied with sewing or small tasks, but they're in free conversation with each other. This is the time when they can talk and catch up on news and laugh about this or that and so forth. But if the weather's a little nicer, they'll go out into the cloister outdoors and they'll spend the time there doing the same. So 2 hours a day in a monastic life, that's pretty significant, and this is also significant in terms of relationships as well. Regarding the times of recreation, one day she made this little comment to me. Why do you go to recreation for your own satisfaction and to find pleasure there? You go there seeking your own satisfaction, your own enjoyment, your own pleasure there. There's something centered on self there. Why do you do that? And here's Therese's counsel. Go there as you would to any other community exercise. So the way you go to praying the divine office, to meals, to your tasks in the day. This is another part of the exercises of daily life. Go there as you would to any other community exercise, out of fidelity, without ever stopping along the way. That is from the refectory to the common room. You have no permission to stop for anything else, even a minute to speak to a sister. This is one of these paradoxes in Therese. She is so utterly free And yet she is so minutely observant of all the even small practices of her every day, and she wants to be completely faithful to them. And she's inculcating this to Marie. I suppose in our different setting, outside of a cloistered life, we all know what our duties are each day, the things that God asks of us in the course of the day, you know, to care for this person or attend to that, or whatever it might be, life of prayer and so forth. And Therese's counsel would be faithful to that. Be completely faithful to that, you know, give of yourself in those different settings. All right, that's how you go to recreation. Now when you're actually in recreation, then in recreation, practice virtue. Be kind to all, no matter whom you are with. And that's no small thing, because in the tightly knit life of the cloister, reduced to that small group of persons, with whom are you going to sit? You enter, some of the sisters are seated there, others are entering. Who do you choose to sit next to? Is it the person that you find the most pleasant to be with? What about the person that nobody wants to sit with? Could you sit next to that person? Or someone who is more difficult for you, could you reach out to that person? Be cheerful out of virtue and not by whim. So that's a bit for Marie, who could tend to be a little excessive in this. When you are sad, okay, so you're sad, you're with the other sisters, how do you respond to this? I think we already know. When you are sad, forget yourself and show yourself cheerful. It might seem that during recreation, we should seek only to enjoy ourselves without thinking of practicing virtue, without thinking about the good God. Okay, this is just time for fun, so to speak, just to enjoy each other and ourselves. No, don't live it that way. Yes, enjoy it for sure. But do it for the good God, she says, and practicing virtue. So here's her Therese response. But recreation is a community exercise like any other. Yes, enjoy yourself, but above all, out of charity toward others. So that's always the center of everything. How can you be loving in this setting? Is there a sister whose heart would be lifted up if you chose to sit next to her, and if you allowed her to talk about something that's weighing on her heart, for example? How can you be loving in this setting in which you are enjoying yourself, but bring love into it? Do not lose a proper self-control. Remain virtuous in the midst of enjoyment. You should make the sacrifice of placing yourself next to those you like. In other words, no, don't just go in there and head toward the people or person or persons with whom you find most agreeable. Make that sacrifice. Choose the person who may need you today and whose heart you can lift up. So then Marie asks a very human question. As I asked her if this was to hold for all the times of recreation, you mean every time I go, I always have to do this? And Therese replied, yes, you should always give this up. For it is good to be cheerful during recreation, but there is a certain religious way of being cheerful, of giving pleasure to others. We've quoted this before. Sometimes you do this to excess. Do you believe that this pleases the sisters? They laugh at your follies, it is true, but this does not edify him. So there is the little way again. Here are the small things of every day. Put love into them. Know who could benefit from your presence, your company, your listening ear, and everything that you do. And the one word that I've come up with for Therese is relentless. There are no exceptions to this, as you see her say to Marie.
You've been listening to St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Be sure to check out the comprehensive summary and reflection questions contained in the show notes for this episode. To download this particular episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, which is to offer authentic and rock-solid spiritual formation freely to souls around the world. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.